The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my friend, engineer, producer, Tom Fairbanks. Together, we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show, Thursday, January 2nd. 2020. Today we close out our ninth year of the Buckmaster Show, and that means tomorrow we begin year number 10 on the radio, broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. You're listening to 1030 Tucson's Voice for Trusted News Talk, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. All of our podcasts available for you there. 2019 was the 43rd annual Southwest Books of the Year competition presented by the Pima County Public Library. Southwest Books of the Year features titles published in the calendar year 2019 that are about the Southwest or subjects that are set in our region. It includes fiction and nonfiction titles, as well as a selection of books for kids. More than 100 publishers, including independent and university presses, submitted titles to be considered for publication this year. Selected titles come from more than 25 of those publishers. This competition is made possible by a gift from the Friends of the Pima County Public Library and by the Arizona State Library Archives and Public Records, a division of the Secretary of State with federal funds from the Institute of Museums and Library Services. Books selected by two or more of the seven reviewers become a top pick. This year there are 11 top picks. We'll try to cover as many of them as possible over the next half hour with two of the reviewers joining us on the program to talk about this year's submissions. Dr. Bruce Dingus is with us. Dr. Dingus, retired director of publications for the Arizona Historical Society. Helene Woodhams is here. She's retired from the Pima County Public Library, where she was the literary arts librarian and coordinator of Southwest Books of the Year. Bruce and Helene, welcome. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Bill.
Bruce, first of all, kudos to you because a book that you were involved with and are involved with, the book called America's Most Alarming Writer, Essays on Life and the Work of Charles Bowden. This was edited by yourself and Bill Broyles, one of the top 11 picks. First of all, congratulations to you. How this project briefly, Bruce, come about?
When Chuck Bowden passed away 5 years ago now, amazingly, he left behind 8 manuscripts that are being published by the University of Texas Press, along with release of his past titles that are out of print. And this is sort of an introduction to Chuck for people who don't remember him or people who have never been introduced to his writing, and we want people to understand who Chuck was, why he matters, and why you ought to read him.
This book is published by
University of Texas Press.
Prolific. 8 manuscripts?
8 unpublished manuscripts.
Wow. Helene, what'd you like about the book? This is one of your picks.
It is one of my picks. So it was author Jim Harrison who admiringly described his friend Bowden as America's most alarming writer. Mm-hmm. And Harrison also said, and I love this, reading Bowden is to ride in a Ferrari without brakes. There's lots of oxygen, but no safe way to stop. So when he passed away, Charles Bowden had achieved icon status for his uncompromising vision and his riveting prose and his relentless pursuit of the truth. And the thing that you understand from this book is that no one whose life intersected with his came away unchanged. The book is a testament to that, with 50 essays by friends, writers, editors, and fellow desert rats, including the likes of Luis Urrea, Phil Caputo, Leslie Marmon Silko, all writing on how they knew Bowden and how they understood his impact. And there's even a coda by Bowden himself. But fans of Bowden will be especially interested in the introduction by Bruce and Bill, which is a revealing and insightful account of Bowden's life and why his writing matters. You can dip into this book anywhere, and you will come away inspired.
I look forward to reading it because I knew Chuck, and he was on my TV show many times. Such a character, but incredibly talented, Bruce. What a bright light.
Yeah, it was bittersweet doing this book.
I bet.
Because we knew Chuck for 30 or 40 years, too, and it's sad that he's not with us anymore.
Bruce, what'd you like about this next pick, Big Wonderful Country? It's a history of Texas, the author Stephen Harrigan.
900 pages. This is a big, wonderful book.
900. That is an epic.
And it's a page-turner, I'm happy to say. I went to school in Texas. I lived in Texas through most of my 20s, so it has a special place for me. But I always wondered why there just really wasn't a satisfactory history of Texas. A part of it's because it's such a big state, sprawling geographically, but also because it's such a multicultural state, which most people probably don't realize. And it took Steve Harrigan to come along, who's a longtime journalist, nonfiction, fiction, screenwriter, to just gather up all the pieces and to see it as a whole and to give credit long overdue to marginalized people and people at the outer, who have been put out to the outer rims of the main Texas narrative. And so, and he tells it in stories. So it's an incredibly readable book, lavishly illustrated. This is the history that Texas has deserved for a long time, and it's going to stand for a long time.
Stephen Harrigan's book, Big Wonderful Country, A History of Texas. The next book first, Sandra Day O'Connor. Of course, that's appropriate a title. Helene Woodham's first. She paved the way, didn't she?
Well, she was the first female Supreme Court justice, mm-hmm. Appointed by Ronald Reagan in 1981. The standout thing about this book for me is that the O'Connor family gave the biographer Evan Thomas full access to all of her papers and encouraged all her friends and colleagues to talk to him, and it was a gold mine. And he used it well. His access was so complete that it surprised even him, and he came up with all kinds of inside baseball information and tidbits, including the fact that her fellow classmate at Stanford University, William Rehnquist, proposed to her, and she strung him along for a while and then, married someone else. But it's that kind of information that really propels this book. The thing that speaks to me the most about it, though, is the theme he returns to frequently, which is that growing up on a cattle ranch in Arizona was the making of Sandra Day O'Connor. It gave her grit and her determination and her grace under fire. Her mantra to her law clerks was, no whining, get the job done. He follows her through, the early years when she couldn't get a job as a lawyer, follows her through her ascent in the state house, and this alone is worth the price of admission because he's got these hair-raising stories of how she stood her ground in the rowdy and frequently drunk good old boys' club that was the Arizona State House. I mean, it's a riot to read some of this stuff. And frankly, I had not expected to like this book as much as I did because I thought it would get too deeply into jurisprudence and so forth.
Right.
But the fact is he emphasizes the important cases, and he's even-handed and he's nonpartisan in his treatment of O'Connor, who was the swing vote, in this closely divided court that delivered abortion rights and affirmative action, but also handed the presidency to George W. Bush. It's an intimate and revealing portrait, highly readable book about one of America's most consequential women.
It's the Bookmaster Show. We're talking about the 2019, 43rd annual Southwest Books of the Year competition. 11 picks by the judges this year, including a book called Desert Harvest, New and Selected Essays. That's by Bruce Berger. Pieces by environmentalist, essayist, poet, and classical pianist Bruce Berger. Another book that made the list, Powerhouse, The Life and Work of Judith Chafee. And Bruce, a lot of people have heard of Judith because well-known Tucson architect.
Yeah, unfortunately, probably best remembered because one of her houses was bulldozed by Pima County in Gates Pass back in the 80s, unfortunately. But this book puts her in her well-deserved place among Tucson architects and national architects.
Let's see if we can work one more in before the break. How about a novel, the novel Inland by Tia Obrecht? Bruce, quick comment on this one.
Obrecht is Hungarian, Serbian. Serbian, and she writes with a strain of magical realism about the West that's just really gripping and weaves historical and fictional characters together in a way that kind of reimagines what we think about the Old West. I just found it really engrossing.
Helene? Quick comment about it?
Yeah, she, interestingly enough, having been born in Serbia, she learned to love Westerns at her grandfather's knee. And so she's taken all the elements of a classic Western, like the spectacular landscape and bad guys and gritty pioneers and so forth, and then put a cloak of the supernatural over them. It has an ending you will never forget. It's just gripping.
All right.
I should mention Tia Ober. This is her second novel. Her first was The Tiger's Wife, which won the Orange Prize and was a finalist for the National Book Award. This book is on everybody's best book list, and it well deserves it.
Southwest Books of the Year 2019 top picks. We've covered and mentioned six of them. When we come back after the break, we'll talk about the remaining five. But quickly in review, A Desert Harvest, New and Selected Essays by Bruce Berger, America's Most Alarming Writer, Essays on the Life and Work of Charles Bowden, edited by Bill Broyles. And our guest with us here, Dr. Bruce Dingus. Big Wonderful Country, A History of Texas, Stephen Harrigan. First, Sandra Day O'Connor, Evan Thomas, the biographer there. And Inland, a novel, Tia Obreck. And we also mentioned the book Powerhouse, The Life and Work of Architect Judith Chafee. Be right back on the Buckmaster Show after we tell you about my favorite bakery in town, Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Helene, have you been up to Mona's?
I live right near there.
Well,
and it is a marvel.
It is. Mona's is known for the Danish Kringle, which was very popular this holiday season. They always have a great Christmas and New Year's. They did very well. And Steve, the owner, Baker, wants to thank all the Buckmaster Show listeners for making this a very special holiday season. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is their website. Of course, there's a link not only to Mona's, but we are so blessed with the partners that we have on this program. And you can find a link to all of them on my website, buckmastershow.com. We'll be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson.
Biosphere 2's new ocean tour takes you behind the scenes of the largest experimental ocean in the world, researching solutions for the global coral reef crisis. Other exciting tours include The Amazing 30-Year History, a family tour for families with kids 10 and under, and the inspiring Under the Glass Tour, one of the 50 must-see wonders of the world. Visit UA Biosphere 2 today. Explore the future. Online giving for coral reef research and information about tours and more at biosphere2.org. The Regional Transportation Authority and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 850 transportation projects or service improvements across the region to date. The RTA is a state-established political subdivision and taxing district. The RTA's current half-cent sales tax funds the 20-year plan through June 2026. And the RTA is laying the foundation to develop a new plan. To learn more, please visit www.rtanext.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your health care by taking your medicines safely.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are talking about the 43rd Annual Southwest Books of the Year Competition, talking about the 11 top picks for 2019. To be a top pick, the judges, and there were seven reviewers, the book has to be selected by two or more of those seven reviewers. Two of the reviewers with us for the Buckmaster Show, Dr. Bruce Dingus, retired director of publications for the Arizona Historical Society. Helene Woodhams is with us, retired from the Pima County Public Library, where she was the literary arts librarian and coordinator of the Southwest Books of the Year competition. So we talked in the first segment about six of the 11 top picks, so I'm going to quickly go over those. A Desert Harvest, New and Selected Essays by Bruce Berger. America's Most Alarming Writer, Essays on the Life and Work of Charles Bowden, Bill Broyles, and Bruce Dingus, who's with us, were the editors for that book. Big Wonderful Country, A History of Texas by Stephen Harrigan. First, Sandra Day O'Connor by Evan Thomas. And Inland, a novel by Tia Obreck. And the sixth book, Powerhouse, The Life and Work of the Well-Known Tucson Architect, Judith Chafee. All right, turning to book number seven, Retablos, Stories from a Life Lived Along the Border, Octavio Solis. Helene, what did you like about this book?
Well, Solis is an award-winning Latino playwright and director, and this is his debut memoir. In it, he recalls his experiences, as he says, growing up brown on the U.S.-Mexico border in El Paso. He lived a mile from the Rio Grande, where he says he was able to see both the First World and the Third World from his backyard. The title Retablos refers to a form of devotional painting, an offering for blessings received. And this collection of lyrical and tightly written vignettes has the vibrant quality and the drama of a painting, and it's delivered like a gift to the reader. The detail is stunning, the imagery is vivid, and it feels like an eyewitness experience. The author speaks of his coming of age, his parents' migration from Mexico. He recalls his terrible awareness of racism. He remembers the people he lived with and those passing north. All of the events, sometimes tender, sometimes traumatic, shaped his life as he became a man. It's a book you'll want to linger over. It's beautifully written.
Retablos, Stories from a Life Lived Along the Border. Our next book, The Death and Life of Ida Hernandez, a border story. Bruce, you've been telling everybody to get a hold of this book.
And I'll say it again. This is just a riveting book. It's Ida Hernandez is a fictional name for a real young woman who, when we meet her, is in an ambulance trying to get across the border at Agua Prieta to save her life after she's been stabbed in Agua Prieta. And it follows her through a series of unfortunate mistakes that she makes through the criminal justice system in Arizona, in the federal justice system, prison, and it's just a tragic story. She eventually, I'll give away the ending of the book. I mean, she survives it all, but it tells you what a horrible, horrible mess it is once you get into the justice system on the border. And it's just a tribute to people like her that are sort of caught in something where they're swimming upstream against a rising tide. So I, you know, like I said, I just can't recommend this book highly enough.
And again, the author is Aaron
Bobrow Strain.
All right. The Girl in the Iron Box, How an Arizona Kidnapping Stumped Hoover's FBI. This is a book by a gentleman by the name of Bruce Cool. Bruce, what can you tell us about this?
Paul Cool. In just to be transparent, I recused myself on this one because this is the last book that I accepted for publication and edited as the publications director of the Arizona Historical Society. Paul was a friend. He's an attorney, a historian, and he passed away just weeks after he turned this manuscript over to me. And it has to do with the 1934 kidnapping of six-year-old June Robles, who was abducted on her way to school and was found 9 weeks later, or 19 days later, in an iron box buried in the desert. She lived into her 80s, died a few years ago, always refused to talk about this. Her kidnappers were never found. But what Paul is looking at is the investigation. The FBI launched a three-year investigation. Hordes of suspects were rounded up. Nobody was ever tried for it. The FBI, J. Edgar Hoover, finally declared this case solved for no, even though it never was.
Huh.
And Paul has delved through the FBI records extensively. And it also gives you a really rare portrait of a certain section of Tucson, the underbelly of Tucson, during the Prohibition
era.
During
the 30s, yeah.
It's really
fascinating.
And
this is right on the heels of the Lindbergh kidnapping.
It is. Yeah. And it's really a fascinating look both at Tucson and also at the workings of the FBI just as J. Edgar Hoover is taking over the operation.
Could it have been a hoax, Bruce Dingus?
That was always a speculation that the family was involved, but nothing was ever proved.
What about ransom money?
It was never paid. The grandfather refused to pay the ransom money.
Wow. Name of the book, The Girl in the Iron Box, How an Arizona Kidnapping Stumped Hoover's FBI, the author Paul Cool. Helene, our next book is titled The Light Years, a memoir, Chris Rush.
So the saying is, if you can remember the 1960s, you probably weren't there. But judging by Tucson artist Chris Rush's memoir, coming of age as a young gay man in the period from about 1967 to 1976, the surprise isn't so much that he could remember it, but the fact that he survived it at all. He set out to Tucson to make a major drug purchase when he was, you know, just barely out of his teens, in kind of drug-fueled overdrive. And he careened around the country searching for kinship and for love and for belonging and for meaning. And somehow he managed to remain upbeat and avoid despair, despite a lot of setbacks along the way. He grew up in a very Tony suburb of New Jersey in a large, rather dysfunctional family. His father berated him for being queer. His mother sent him off to private school to kind of keep peace at home. And his beloved older sister turned him on at age 11. This was not a place for a kid who needed answers, so he hit the road and he encounters freaks and oddballs and UFO believers and menacing war vets and, you know, all sorts of strange people.
Sounds like the 60s.
Kind of. Well, there you are. So he hits rock bottom, right? And yeah, he takes off to the Catalina Mountains where he's living rough. I mean, in this kind of crazy existence, to stay warm, he burns his letters and his...
Oh, my goodness.
And his artwork and his Bible. But begins to reconnect with his selfhood. And it is a remarkable story that you simply can't put down. You have to keep turning the pages. You know, the portrait of the artist as a young man, you know, 70s style.
The Light Years, a memoir by Chris Rush. Our 11th and final pick, The Wild Bunch, Sam Peckinpah, A Revolution in Hollywood and the Making of a Legendary Film. Bruce, you liked this book very much.
I did. If you want to feel old, just realize that last year was the 50th anniversary of the release of The Wild Bunch. I mean, this is what I consider the classic Western. Stratton has gone about this like a really dogged sleuth. He's interviewed everybody who's still alive that had to do with the motion picture, and he's shown how Peckinpah shaped this into what is not just a classic American Western, but a classic global film. And it's all here. You don't have to be a film nut to enjoy it because it's a story of a man of just really indomitable will and an artistic vision who got the damn thing made the way he wanted to make it, and it's a classic.
The Wild Bunch, Sam Peckinpah, A Revolution in Hollywood, The Making of a Legendary Film. Bruce, I want to go back to your book that you edited, America's Most Alarming Writer, Essays on the Life and Work of Charles Bowden. Helene, the Pima Library Foundation has an event coming up that Bill Broyles and Bruce Dingus will be front and center at, January 16th.
That's right. It'll be January 16th. It happens at Hacienda del Sol Resort. You can get more information and purchase tickets. Go to the Pima Library Foundation website. These are wonderful evenings. You get upfront and personal with the authors and find out so much, and we all have a great time.
And folks, if you didn't catch all of the names of the books, Helene, they'll be available on the library's website, sure.
Well, and as of today, mm-hmm. I believe, the publication itself should be available in libraries.
All the publications.
And also online.
Online. Terrific. Helene and Bruce, congratulations. Another excellent Southwest Books of the Year 2019 top picks. Did you overall, Bruce, what can you say about this group? Did you like the offerings?
I loved my every single one this time. I don't always say that, but any book that has the life and, or death and life of Ada Hernandez on it is a spectacular year.
And Inland is going to be a novel for the generations, I'm convinced.
All right. Thank you both very much. Happy New Year to both of you.
Same to you,
Happy
Bill.
New Year.
Buckmaster Show and the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio. We'll take a break right here. CBS Network News takes a one-minute news update right now. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine in a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Biosphere 2's new ocean tour takes you behind the scenes of the largest experimental ocean in the world, researching solutions for the global coral reef crisis. Other exciting tours include The Amazing 30-Year History, a family tour for families with kids 10 and under, and the inspiring Under the Glass Tour, one of the 50 must-see wonders of the world. Visit UA Biosphere 2 today. Explore the future. Online giving for coral reef research and information about tours and more at biosphere2.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Ever dream of taking a river cruise? Bon Voyage Travel introduces you to Ama Waterways. You'll explore authentic culture in captivating landscapes in luxury and comfort, all on board an award-winning fleet while you travel through incredible cities and villages in Europe, Southeast Asia, and Africa. Picture yourself on the river, indulging in Ama Waterways' locally inspired cuisine paired with complimentary wine with every lunch and dinner. Contact Bon Voyage Travel today to customize your river cruise vacation.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock-full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, closing out 9 full years on the radio, ready to launch 3, 2, 1 tomorrow, 12:04. The 10th year we get going on the 10th year on Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things, 50 years and still growing, an extraordinary collection of Talavera pottery, antiques, fine art, handmade furniture, lighting, home accessories and gifts at Zocalo Village, of course, plus 13 acres of amazing plants, trees, annuals, and more. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com. Thank you, Green Things, for your support. Thanks to Silver City for their support pretty much since day one of the Buckmaster Show. Silver City, our friends over there, just a 3-hour drive from Tucson to a beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment. SouthwestNewMexico.org for the complete listing of great places to stay and all sorts of recreation opportunities in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Dr. David Levy is the Buckmaster Show contributor on science. He's the former science editor of Parade Magazine, now head of and founder of Sharing the Sky Educational Organization. Dr. Levy, what an amazing person. One of the most successful comet discoverers in history, discovering 23 comets, including his co-discovery of Shoemaker-Levy 9, the comet that collided with Jupiter in 1994, producing the most spectacular explosions ever witnessed in the solar system. David, happy New Year to you.
And happy New Year to you, Bill, and to your listeners. And may 2020 be a wonderful, healthy, prosperous year for everyone. And may your listening range and grow to include all of Tucson so that whenever the Buckmaster Show is on, Tucson stops and everyone listens.
Everyone listens. There you go. What's this about a meteor that's been captured on film?
It's kind of hard to show it over the radio, but I can certainly describe it. About 2 weeks ago, I was out observing the Ursid meteor shower, and when I'm out observing meteors, I usually have my camera on to take a series of 30-second exposures. And while the camera was open, I saw the start of a very, very slow-moving meteor. At first, I thought, could this be an airplane? But no, it was a meteor. It was just below Orion, moving towards the southeast, and moved very slow and brightening, and then got quite bright, and then faded and disappeared. And immediately after the exposure was over, I noticed that it had captured the meteor on film. And I traced the meteor back, and I was able to trace it back all the way northward to the constellation of Cepheid.
Wow.
It was a December Cepheid, and I happen to know which comet the December Cepheids come from.
Which one?
It comes from a comet that I discovered in 2006.
Wow!
And as soon as I found the comet, Peter Brown from University of Western Ontario and I were in touch, and he said that there is a meteor shower from that. It is actually, its maximum takes place on New Year's Eve, but the meteors, you can tell that they are because they move very slowly, and this was one of them.
Wow, any big meteor showers planned for 2020?
You think so, huh? Yes, Friday night. One of the biggest showers of the year will be the Quadranted meteor shower, coming from the star Arcturus in the modern constellation of Bootes. But if you follow the old constellations, it comes from the constellation of Quadrans Mirales, and you need to stay up late before the radiant rises. But we could get as many as 50 to 60 or more meteors per hour.
Oh, my goodness. It.
And I'm certainly going to try that on Friday night.
Wow, let's hope the weather is good. That's almost one a minute. That would be really
That would be great. And yeah. I hope we get some bright ones that I can record on with the camera.
Hey, I heard there's a solar eclipse coming in Argentina in 2020. I think it's December 14th, almost a year from now. Any plans to go down there?
No, I'd like to. I'd like to very much see it, but... you know, as I get older and not quite as wealthy, I can't afford to go, so I'm just going to have to think about it. I've seen a lot of eclipses, more than 90 of them.
Oh, my goodness.
That includes total solar eclipses, partial and penumbral lunar eclipses, and all kinds of eclipses. But I'm probably going to have to skip this one. But those of you who can afford to make the trip... it's well worthwhile. Have you ever seen a total eclipse of the sun, Bill?
No, I haven't. I would love to.
That's something I really recommend you try to see.
Are you doing the star party in May?
Yeah, we are. We're having a star party, for those of you who don't want to travel to Argentina. It is in May, and it's the Arizona Dark Sky Star Party. And it's going to be at Karstner Caverns. And if you're interested in going to it, you may want to look up on the web, explorescientific.com. And they're the ones that are running the star party. And it should be a lot of fun. We did the first one last October, and we were able to reserve the park again for May. And we're going to have it, I think it's Memorial Day weekend.
Okay, and again, the website, please.
It's explorescientific, one word. explorescientific.com.
Time for the David Levy, Dr. David Levy quote of the month. David?
Yeah, I have three quotes this month. Two of them are from Enheduanna, who lived 4,000 years ago from 2285 to 2250 BCE. And she might have seen Comet Hale-Bopp when it was last here before this 1997 appearance. The first quote says, "Inside, the light is dim. Even moonlight does not enter." The second one says, "The shining house of stars, bright with lapis stones, has opened itself to all lands." Those are from the temple hymns. And the third quote is from Shakespeare, my favorite author, and it's from Romeo and Juliet. "Come, gentle night. Come, loving, black-browed night. Give me my Romeo. And when he shall die, take him and cut him out in little stars, and he will make the face of heaven so fine that all the world will be in love with night and pay no worship to the garish sun."
Oh, that's nice. Very nice. Did you say something about Hale-Bopp? So Hale-Bopp is only coming around, what, almost every 2,000 years?
About every 4,000 years.
Oh, every 4,000 years.
Yeah,
oh.
So 4,200 years ago. Would have been about the time that Enheduanna was living and writing. I think she is the first recorded poet whose writings could be translated easily into modern English.
Wow. Dr. David Levy, always a pleasure. We wish you and your lovely wife, Wendy, your partner, a wonderful 2020. I think we've already got you now on the calendar for February, so
yeah.
We'll look forward to your visit, your second visit of the year with us. Thank you, David.
Okay, thanks a lot, Bill, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Dr. David Levy with us on the Buckmaster Show, our contributor on science. We're so delighted to have people like Dr. Levy. Over 24 contributors to this program. Our legal contributor, Dr. Don Luce, not Dr. Don Luce, Attorney Don Luce, is coming up next for the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio, rounding out 9 full years, ready to launch year number 10 tomorrow. Be right back.
This is Moa Mo's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Mo has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Mo for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Mo's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
The current Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year plan, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to identify priority projects based on public input. RTA member jurisdictions will submit their respective project lists by June 2020 for the CAC to consider for a future plan. To learn more, visit www.rtanext.com.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show as we close out 9 full years on the radio, ready to launch year 10. A gentleman who was one of my first calls when I decided to leave television at Channel 6 and do go off on my own, kind of like with a rock band where you decide, well, I think I'll go solo. One of my calls was to attorney Don Luce of Luce Law Group offices here in Tucson, and I asked Don his advice, and he said, Bill, go for it. Hey, Don, how are you? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Bill.
The Luce Group, of course, always available for you in Tucson and Phoenix. And, of course, Don Luce is the author of two very popular books, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers in Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. I think the estate planning book, the second printing, came out near the end of 2019, right, Don?
That's correct, in the fall.
In the fall. So both books now in the second printing. Okay, Arizonans will be continuing take a little bit more money home. The first of the year means Arizona's minimum wage went up.
It did. It went from $11 to $12 per hour. That is a statewide minimum. Next year, it will likely increase, but not by a fixed amount. It'll be adjusted based on inflation. I think we can expect something like a 30-cent per hour increase for next year, but for this year, a full dollar, and that's pretty significant. That's over $2,000 for a full-time worker.
So, Don, each state pretty much sets their minimum wage. They have to meet a federal ceiling for a minimum wage, but after that, it's each state can go that direction.
Exactly right. Yeah. Here's how it works. Each state has a minimum wage or it doesn't. If it doesn't, then federal law applies. Under federal law, which, by the way, hasn't increased the minimum wage since 2009, that's 10 years, the minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. So as you can see, in Arizona, hourly worker is getting nearly $5 more per hour than the federal minimum wage requires. Most states, I would say, have a minimum wage that is higher than $7.25 an hour, but there are a significant number of states that do not have a independent minimum wage, and their minimum wage then is the federal minimum wage.
But even with this increase in our minimum wage, Arizona wages, Don Liu, still lag behind the rest of the country.
They do. It's kind of surprising, actually. But if you look at the average wage,
right?
Okay, the average wage in Arizona is $26.85. Okay, nationwide it's $28.21. So even though $26.85 seems like a fairly high number, especially when compared to the minimum, it still lags the average national wage by about $1.50.
Now, can a family of four survive on the minimum wage and still be near or above the poverty line?
That's a really good question. The advocates for minimum wages and increased minimum wages contend that even at the current $12 per hour, that is not a living wage. If you do the math, if someone works full time, they can expect to clock about 2,080 hours a year. That's 40 hours a week, 52 weeks. That would result at minimum at $24,960, so just less than $25,000. The federal poverty level for 2020 for the 48 contiguous states in Washington, D.C., for a family of four is $25,750, which is roughly $750 more than what an individual could make earning minimum wage working full-time in Arizona.
Now, you mentioned next year there would be an increase, but do we know how much that will be in the minimum wage? Will that be set by this upcoming legislative session?
No, it's going to be based upon inflation. It'll be adjusted based on the inflation index, which is unknown at this time. And that's different from what's happened over the past several years. The reason we have a $12 per hour minimum wage in 2020 is because the voters of Arizona in 2016 passed Proposition 206. And under Proposition 206, the minimum wage was increased from what was in 2016, $8.05 an hour, to $10 an hour in 2017, which then increased to $10.50 in 2018, $11 last year, and now $12 this year. For 2021, there is no fixed increased minimum wage, but rather an inflation adjustment.
All right. Another item that caught our attention, the city council in Tucson and the mayor could have their terms extended by another year. They were elected, the new mayor, Regina Romero, and three council people, for a four-year term, but it might turn out they just got 5 years. They get an extra bonus year. How come?
Wow. Is that job security?
Yeah. What's this throwing an extra year in?
All right, so let's start with why this could even be possible. And the reason is, in 2018, in other words, last a year or so ago, the Arizona legislature enacted a statute that mandates that certain jurisdictions, depending on voter turnout, are required to hold their elections in even-numbered years. And so it's kind of a complicated formula, but here's how it works. If the turnout in the local primary and the general election on odd-numbered years drops by more than 25% when compared to the same elections when held statewide in even-numbered years, then that's considered to be voter fatigue, and then the state statute requires that that jurisdiction's elections be held on even-numbered years, just like the statewide elections. Well, as you know, the city of Tucson just finished an election in an odd-numbered year, and unfortunately for the city, The turnout was less than what was required by state law to continue to hold elections in odd-numbered years.
They didn't meet the mandate.
They did not. In fact, only about 37% of registered voters turned out compared to the last election in even-numbered year that resulted in a 67% turnout. So missed by more than 10,000 voters, which is pretty significant given the size of the city. Based on those numbers, under the statute, the city of Tucson is going to be required to hold its election in even numbered years. Well, the mayor and the three Democratic council people who were just elected would have termed out in 2023.
Right.
Which is 4 years.
Right.
But the next even-numbered election wouldn't be held until 2024, which would make it a 5-year term. Mm-hmm. And the three members of the city council who were elected in 2017, also an odd-numbered year, would be asked to serve an additional year. And instead of terming out in 2021, they would term out in 2022. So everybody on the council and the mayor under this state statute may get another year in office because the city under this statute cannot hold its elections in odd-numbered years based upon the last election's turnout, which was insufficient to meet the state minimum.
There will be a challenge, but you got to wonder about that challenge. From what you've just said, doesn't look like it has a real strong case.
Well, I don't know. I don't know about that. But
okay.
But what I am sure about is that under the doctrine of preemption, as it applies to state laws, the state statute takes precedence over a conflicting local statute. Mm-hmm. And in this case, it's the Tucson city charter that mandates that the election should be in odd-numbered years. Here you have a statewide body being the Arizona legislature, which has passed a statute that says you can't do that. And so a court will be faced with the question, can a city like Tucson hold its elections in odd-numbered years when a statute passed by the state legislature says they can't?
Right.
I'm not sure how that's going to turn out, but the mayor did say that she wants to discuss the issue with the city attorney in an executive session next month, which would suggest that there may be a court challenge imminent. The city, according to what I've read, is confident that they would prevail in a court challenge. But then the state Senate leader, J.D. Mesnard, says, well, no. If it is challenged, we're confident that the state legislature is going to prevail.
All right. We may be having elections in even-numbered years. We'll have to see how it goes.
We'll have to see.
All right. This would be a good time. People make New Year's resolutions. One would be a good one. Do some estate planning, right, Don?
Well, everybody should do estate planning, but there's nothing like getting it off the list of things to do for 2020.
And a good source would be Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know, just recently in its second printing. Don Luce, thank you very much for everything you do with your monthly visits, keeping us up to date on new developments with the law. We very much appreciate your support of our program.
Thank you, Bill. It's always my pleasure to come on your show.
Thank you very much. Don Luce, Attorney Don Luce of the Luce Law Group with offices in Tucson and Phoenix. That is going to do it for the Buckmaster Show this Thursday edition, even though it feels like a Monday, right? We've got the Friday Focus interview with Kathy Hoffman, Superintendent of Public Instruction, tomorrow on our Friday Focus interview as we launch in to year number 10 of the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Don Luce, Tom Fairbanks, engineer producer, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great afternoon.